Okay. Yeah. Shavua Tov, ladies and gentlemen. This is the conclusion of this particular subset in the general topic of the Aguna crisis. I would like to announce that next year I'd like to speak about prenuptial agreements. I think it's an important topic which we haven't spoken about until now. I believe it's important that we speak about it and advocate for it. But tonight's shiur is still continuing the series which began a couple of shiurim ago. There were those who wished to undo marriages based upon what we call kiddushei tos, which means that it was a marriage under a mistaken assumption. We find such an example with respect to buying and selling. If you buy something, whether it be a car or a table, and there's something wrong with it, you want your money back. Say it's a mistake, a mekach tos. So perhaps that should apply equally to situations of marriage as well. So I gave out sources. The sources are written in, here's the original to show you, it's something called Kol Tzvi, which came out with, recently. And this is something which I wrote about. It's written in rabbinic Hebrew, and I don't plan to go through every little nuance, but those who are able to catch a glimpse at what's happening, I will try to give a summary in my own words, including many other things which are not printed. But for those who are able to access it, it'll be very helpful. We begin with the Gemara Masechta Yevamos. Gemara is the following story. There is a man who's the product of a non-Jewish father and a Jewish mother. He's having a lot of problems finding a shidduch. No one wants to marry him. You know, the mechutin. Who's the mechutin? So no one wants to marry him. So he's single. No one wants to marry the poor fellow. So what happens? Can't get married. So the Gemara tells us, the rabbis told him, zil itmiro zil gale, hide or go into exile. Rashi explains, to a place where no one knows who you are, and marry a Jewish woman, because if they know who you are, they will not go through with the shidduch. He asks the stipler, for those who don't know, the stipler of Yaakov Yisrael Kanievsky was considered perhaps the greatest of all the Rosh Hashivas of his time. He passed away in 1985. He was a brother-in-law of the famous Chazon Ish. He was the top of the line in terms of the rabbinical world. He asked the question, what? How do you do this? He asked the question on two levels. Number one, if the shortcoming is so serious, no one wants to marry him, perhaps we should render the marriage null and void. That's what fits into our discussion. Maybe it's Kiddushei Tos. I didn't know that this person had a non-Jewish father. I never would have wanted to marry him. And two, even if it doesn't rise to that level of seriousness to nullify the marriage retroactively, but going forward, you're not permitted to hide a blemish in an item that you want to sell. Even if it's not such a serious blemish that would be rise to the level of canceling the sale. You're supposed to have transparency. You're supposed to reveal whatever shortcomings that exist within the particular item you want to sell. Those are his two questions. Are the questions understood? Feel free to raise your hand if you have a question. Those are his questions. Yes?
What's the question that he didn't affirmatively bring that up?
That's correct.
Or that she brought it up?
Well, he's hiding it. He's running away to another place. That's the discussion. That was the topic for today. Shidduchim and disclosure. What, when, and who? That's our topic. Now we'll try to discuss it in an hour. It's not so easy to fill it all in. We'll do the best we can. Right. Says the stipler, a fundamental distinction between buying and selling objects and marriage. And it goes as follows. If I want to buy something, I want to buy a chair. There's a chair. You sell me a chair, it costs X dollars. I bought the chair, fine. Turns out, there's a scratch on the chair. I don't want to buy a scratch chair. I want to buy a new chair with no scratches. And I say, for the same money, the X dollars, I could have purchased a chair with no scratches. You sold me a chair with a scratch. I feel very hurt by the fact that you sold me that chair with a scratch, and if the scratch is a serious scratch, and can't be fixed, so I'll say the sale is no sale. The sale is no sale because the chair can be easily replicated. There are millions of such chairs being sold across the country. You sold me a lemon with a scratch. For the same money, I could have bought a chair without a scratch. Therefore, number one, you had no right to hide the scratch. And number two, if it's a serious enough scratch, we can say that the whole sale is null and void. Contrast this with the enterprise known as marriage. We all know, kosher zivugam kikriyas yamsuf. Marriage is as difficult to come by as the splitting of the sea, which we'll read about in a few weeks. Difficult. Very difficult. When people agree to get married, it's a big simcha. And you're not going to say, as I've heard sometimes, there are many fish in the sea. So I won't marry this one, I'll marry that one. I won't buy this chair, buy that chair. Everyone understands intuitively that's a ridiculous comparison. Because this particular man or woman that you want to marry has so many unique characteristics that attract you to him or her. So therefore, let's give an example. Extreme example. The person has a scratch. What do you mean by a scratch? I don't know. You can't see it. He's wearing shoes. And then somewhere near on one of his toes is a birthmark, a scratch, or whatever it may be. So, you know, they get married and the husband or wife, whoa, you didn't tell me you had this scratch or birthmark on your fourth toe on the left foot. Ooh. Must it be disclosed? Absolutely not. Why? What's the person going to say? I could have found another man or woman the same as you without the scratch. That's an absurd proposition. It's ridiculous. So therefore, the stipler explains there's no comparison whatsoever between buying and selling chairs on the one hand and getting married on the other hand. So therefore, not only does it not nullify the marriage, but there's no disclosure obligation. Simply explains. A chair with a scratch, a small scratch. All right, I'm not going to go back to the store for the small scratch. I'm going to go argue with the guy. I'll take it. But what will happen if it's a recall? The store called Ford Motor Company. That would be recalled. We found there's a scratch in your car. Okay, scratch. You want a recall? I'll go into the dealership. Give me another car. Same thing. Why not? So what happened to marriage? Recall. Husband or wife said, you didn't realize I had a scratch on the big toe. All right, if you want, I'll get divorced. Recall. Says the stipler, no, it's ridiculous. I'm going to get divorced because of a scratch on the big toe. It's not the same as a scratch in a car. It's different completely. Completely different. They already love each other. It's hard to get divorced. Who knows what it's going to be later on. Can't get the exact same model without the scratch. And therefore he says, whenever, and here's the key line, those who want to look inside, it's the end of the third paragraph. Whenever b'di eved lo yirtze levater al hakinyan af al pi sheyesh bo mumze, b'di eved means post facto. After they got married, you would not want to get divorced, even if they have this particular shortcoming. Lo choshiv gonev das b'mashal osipa kol mumuf. You're not considered to be illicitly hiding something when you don't disclose such a shortcoming. This paragraph is not discussing annulment at all. It's a disclosure obligation. We'll come to that later on. And then he adds a line. And this line is the very next line, beginning the fourth paragraph, is something which I question strongly. V.M. Cain, if a person has a particular shortcoming, it's almost impossible to find a shidduch. Ki b'tchilas ha-shidduchin kol dover koton mekalkel. At the beginning of the shidduch process, any little shortcoming can ruin the whole thing. Whoever's doubting shidduchim knows it's 100% true. So my question is, okay, stipler, you're right. Don't say it at the beginning. Say it a bit later. Don't wait till after the shevet brachos. There's a lot in between, the first date and then the first week of marriage. So sure enough, I found a sefer. It's the only sefer of its kind that I found in print. It's called Binas HaShidduch. And he quotes indirectly from Chazon Ish, from Rav Zilberstein, Rav Yosha Sonov from Chazon Ish, quote, and this is, I think, a very enlightened quote. I'm going to read it again. Ki kol davar shatzibur makbid havimum. Whatever people care about and it bothers them, by definition, is considered to be a shortcoming. So not only is there a halachic disclosure obligation, but the Chazon Ish is a very practical man. V'gam ein zeh mehatvuna. It's not logical. It's not wise. It's not seichodik. Lahastir dava, to hide something. Shes besofo yizgala. It's going to be revealed at the end of the day. Vataromes tishor lekol achayim. There'll be complaints for the rest of the world. How come you kept this from me? Lachain chayovim lesaper. You got to say it. Disclose it. But then he adds, ulam lo bapkisha rishona. Not on the first date. Please, Eddie. Kiim bapkishot ha'achronot lekrat hasof. The last dates. Now, obviously, by definition, how you define the last dates? You never know how many dates are going to be until you can make the decision. I have told people about many shortcomings. You have to reveal it at the midpoint, at the halfway point. And I quip, it's like a radioactive half-life. You don't know in advance what is the midpoint. It depends in large measure on the society to which you belong. We all know in certain Hasidic circles, they have a few dates and it's done. And in certain more modern circles, it's going to take a year. And in between, it's a few months. So you have to estimate, given your particular part of society, how long does it take to you have friends? How long do they go out before they get engaged? When you're halfway through with that particular average, that's when these things should be revealed, in my opinion. That's what's called the kras hasof. Ad kan. Now, so far, have I understand what I'm saying so far? It's very important. But now we come to a critical point, very critical. Can we assume that perhaps there's no disclosure obligation because the fact that the other party did not inquire is an implicit waiver? If you wanted to find out, you should have asked. So the stipler suggests that, in his words, "Miniyat hadrisha b'yuchsin havik haskama." Where's your father? Guy walks in off the street. He's far away from home. My father is 3,000 miles away, 300 miles away. Inquire. Had they, today they'd press a few buttons on the machine, text somebody, and they'd find out right away this fellow's father is not Jewish. Before they had this texting, and there was, there's mail, there are ways to communicate even in the old world. Find out. The fact that you don't bother finding out is an implicit waiver. And then he says, that may be true of who the father is, but it may not be true of the case he happens to be discussing, of an internal medical condition where it's very difficult to inquire. Nobody knows. So he says, well, that's a matter of dispute with respect to buying and selling. If I could check out, if I don't check out, is that called mekachto? So it's an implicit waiver. One. Two, he says, would it enter his mind that this person's father is not Jewish? We're not discussing 2013, when intermarriage is 50%. We're talking about the time of the Gemara, Masechet Yevamos, when there was almost no intermarriage. So, Loyal al Adas wouldn't enter his mind that the father is not Jewish. So therefore you cannot assume any kind of an implicit waiver because it's something which he never even thought about. So therefore we come back to the original proof that marriage is different than buying and selling. Oh. However, there's always a however, one can refute the proof in a different way. What is the shortcoming of having a father who's not Jewish? So I made a light remark before. The mechutin, people want to know. Would it ever become known in that case that the father was not Jewish? In ancient times, he sent him to hide, to run hundreds of miles away. The argument is made by certain later authorities. It'll never become known. So the objective shortcoming is not so severe. It's more of the what are people going to say? But if people will never say because they don't know, then the shortcoming is not so severe, and that's why there is no disclosure obligation. Nowadays, however, when these things always, you know, the world's gotten much smaller, and it keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller, everything comes out at the end of the day, someone's going to find out, perhaps there is a disclosure obligation. This, I believe, is an interpretation in the same Sefer, the Binas HaShidduch. Rabbi Zilberstein quotes his father-in-law, Rav El Yashiv. This is quoted a little more than halfway down, which says page 552, where the number 552 appears, that Rav El Yashiv says, if the father is a non-Jew, you have to reveal it. Now, one thing we know about Rav El Yashiv, he knew all of the Gemara Baal Peh. He has a case in the Gemara where told, hide, run away, don't tell anybody. How can Rabbi El Yashiv say you have to reveal it when the Gemara says you don't have to reveal it? So we don't know. Rabbi El Yashiv was a very man of few words. But one possibility is that's what changed. In Talmudic times, he'd go far away from his original home, stay there for the rest of his life. It would never become known who the father was. One of those unknowns. As opposed to today, when it's going to become known, then there'll be a complaint, as we saw from the Chazon Ish. You have to reveal it. That's my interpretation, can't say for sure it's true, of the citation of Rav El Yashiv, which seems to be in conflict with the explicit Talmudic statement. That's how I reconcile, that's how I resolve it. Even if one assumes, which is a simple interpretation, that you don't have to reveal who the father is the stipler, by the way, the stipler and Rav El Yashiv were mechutanim. Rav Chaim Kanievsky was married to the famous Rebbetzin who was a Rav El Yashiv's daughter. So, it's been told that Rav El Yashiv did not agree with the mechutan. And he said, you cannot compare a medical condition, that's what the disciple was talking about, hiding a medical condition. You cannot hide a medical condition based on the Talmudic statement about hiding your ancestry. Two different things. Two different things. He uses the word pegam mishpacha, a shortcoming in the family. That's only a shortcoming for those who care. If you don't care, you don't care. It's nothing intrinsic. There are many wonderful people in the world whose father is not Jewish and the mother is Jewish. And they're 100% members of the Jewish community. No problem. With a medical condition, that is intrinsic. Then you have to really reveal it. And if it's true what I said before, that Rav Yashiv interpreted the Gemara to refer to a case where you would never find out, that means, putting two and two together, which may not be right to do that, you have to reveal a medical condition even if it will never be found out. Now I'm going to tell you, to depart from the text, tell you a story going around in Flatbush right now as we speak. Yes, Moshe.
Before we get there, in terms of the issue of that the other party should ask a question, using the analogy to let's say, real estate, someone comes to look at my house, I can take the assumption, if you want to know certain things, ask me. I don't have to reveal every detail. Mm-hmm. Ask me. Mm-hmm. A real estate broker has a different ethical obligation. Mm-hmm. This broker is obligated to reveal everything he or she knows about, can't wait to be asked. Mm-hmm. What about a shotgun?
There you go. We said what, when, and who. You're asking about who. I'm up to what. We had a little bit of when. A little bit of when. What's going on in Flatbush? I mean, it's a sad story, but I was told it by more than one person. There's a situation, and the doctors can help me out with this, where some young man, at a very young age, was diagnosed with MS, multiple sclerosis, but it was not yet apparent. In the early stages, it's not apparent. He didn't tell the girl. They got married, three kids, and now it's gotten terrible. And she found out, I guess from he knew about it before. She's furious. She wants out of the marriage. And he wants a lot of money. He doesn't want to leave the marriage so fast. Sad story, correct? Now, sad story. What's the problem? He kept the secret from her, which he shouldn't have kept. I think we all agree that it was not proper that he kept such a significant medical condition secret from a woman that he married. So one person expressed himself, if Rav Moshe were alive, he would say that the marriage is no good, and then you wouldn't have to pay him so much money that he wants to extort for again. This is a quotation I heard earlier this week. I know nothing about the details of the case, could be I'm completely wrong, but we just talk about it in abstract. Would Rav Moshe have said that? See here?
Just a record.
Yeah.
90% of people who are diagnosed with MS will live a pretty normal life. I'm following patients 25 years, they have MS, you would never know it. They go once to the doctor, they're fine, they go on. 90%.
Really? But what Moshe is saying is a very important point. And I was unaware of that. I was unaware of that. My limited experience, I guess, because those who I don't know about, the ones that I do know about, I thought that if the person has it, that's going to it's going to degenerate in a clear way, and he had no right to keep it a secret. What Moshe is implying is if 90% of cases doesn't really affect you, then maybe there's no disclosure obligation. How am I supposed to know which percentage I stand in? We'll see soon other similar cases. Thank you for that. I didn't know that. That changes the picture. What? Okay, so with medication, it doesn't affect you. It's the same thing. I don't want to get involved in medicine, but if you can live what we'll call a relatively normal life with a couple of pills, yes, Michael.
I don't know what Marty said, though. Marty's not aware of this. The New York State has a law, let's say in a private house, you've got to reveal things. You have a duty to reveal, but there's a very easy way out. You get a $500 credit if you don't give this revelation, okay? But what you can see happening, you have the CVs for Shabbat with them, right? You have a questionnaire. Someone will develop a whole questionnaire. But I wonder about the sugar, and so you'll have that problem, but you didn't ask. You'll have a whole formalized questionnaire every time someone suggests the sugar. Is that going to be better?
This is. That's another question.
If you have a child and you know that there's something latent, that could potentially be a problem,
right.
May never be a problem.
Right.
If you tell somebody that's a problem, you're not going to get a sugar.
That's the conundrum. Let's give certain examples. I want to get into the nitty gritty. Life is always in the nitty gritty. You know, it's easy to talk in abstract. We're going to discuss, and we still have quite a bit of time. Let's just go slowly. Listen very carefully to a citation, the third from the last paragraph. It's a one line citation. But this goes back to a classical early source called the Ran in Ksubis. He's talking about a case of a man who marries a woman, and it turns out that this woman is prohibited to him. He's a Kohen, she's a divorcee. She said nothing. Isn't that the ultimate Kiddush Etos? The marriage is valid. And not only that, but we cannot annul the marriage. Bah! She just, slight technicality. She didn't tell him she was divorced. He didn't tell her he was a Kohen. You know, they left out a little basic information. Why not? I would say it's the ultimate. Let's read the words. Not only that, but how could it not have revealed it? Shalohoya hadavar mutal aleihem legalos. There's no disclosure obligation. Either you're a Kohen or she's a divorcee. How can that be? Look at the explanation. This savri, the person who doesn't reveal it. Why didn't I reveal it? The other person is to efshar shia arev olav hamekach. The person will be falipt in love, will want to go through with the marriage, notwithstanding the Torah's prohibition of a Kohen and a divorcee. It's prohibited by the Torah. Catch this now. Masha Enken, in contrast, is with Mumim and Adorim. This woman has certain physical blemishes or took vows. She ain't on the fire's plan. What? This sounds to be almost anti-halachic. You care more about the little blemish in the woman than about a Torah's prohibition? You won't answer that question, right? That's a rhetorical question. Listen to the words. The Chazon Ish explained what this means about it. And the Chazon Ish was a genius, not only in halacha, but in human psychology. He says, if there are certain blemishes, his expression is, Navsho shel Adam soledes behen. A person recoils. He recoils, and therefore, there's a disclosure obligation. In some cases, you can even annul the marriage. As opposed to the Torah's prohibition. That's not a shortcoming. More than that, Navsho shel Adam mechamdosan, quoting from Chazal with respect to Arias. The person wants it. The girl's pretty. The boy's handsome. He'll say, wait a minute, if he's a Torah Jew, he'll have charot, he'll regret it. Listen to what he says. This is an incredible line. What moment do we measure? We measure the following, just imagine this, we should never be tested. Imagine the following scenario. A person is standing under the chuppah. Right? The column arches down. So in certain religions they say, speak now or forever hold your peace. So somebody says, yes, I want to speak now. This woman is a divorcee. He's a kohen. Whoa. Read a movie about this, right? Under the chuppah. He's in love with her. And now he's a kohen. He says, whoa. Says Chazanish about that, this particular case, this moment, Berega Shesamer Bikivosum is Ate Birichuka, he's happy to be near her and be very sad to be away from her. Will he control his Yetzihara? Not to be taken for granted, even if someone is from. Lo Choshiv Umdunod Demuchach. We can't say for certain, that we have a fair guarantee. He's going to back out under such circumstances. I'll ask. The whole thing was duped. The Shatran didn't tell him that she's a divorcee. Is it current? He was duped, you're right. It was betos. He never would have gotten involved in the first place had he known this. Says Chazanish, this does not help to cancel the Kiddushin. As long as at that moment of the marriage, he would not have backed out. And that's only a suffix. We don't know. And even if he'll say, I would have certainly backed out. I'm a righteous Jew. I put on the Rabbeinu Thomas tefillin. Whatever. I'm so righteous. Or she's so righteous. Even if he says so, says the Chazanish, it's Dvorim Shebelev. He says so. But since it's not universal, or even near universal, we cannot cancel the wedding. And not only that, you can't cancel the wedding. It's one thing. The next paragraph, the last paragraph on the page, for that very reason, there's no disclosure obligation. The purchase, literally, will be sweet to him. Even though he finds out that she's a divorcee and he's a kohen, he'll want to stay with her. This Ran seems to me to be the biggest proof for the stipler. What does stipler say? There's no disclosure obligation because, only a shortcoming that is so profound that we know that because of this shortcoming, you wouldn't in any way want to go through with the marriage, that has to be revealed. Whatever situation, b'di'evid, after the fact, they got married already, there's an umdana, there's an assumption. You wouldn't want to get divorced, because after all they got close in love and everything like that, you're not considered fooling someone if you don't disclose it. What's your question?
Why isn't she overlooking
either? Very good question. Maybe she is. Good question. I have to think about it. I don't know. Excellent question. Yes?
So that's under the chuppah.
Right.
And he's already sort of kind of...
More than that. He's in.
Right. He's
yeah.
Over the edge. So,
right.
But there's no discussion about 3 months earlier.
100%. But this... I'm telling you what's in print. Yes, sir. I agree.
But this undercuts any observance of mitzvahs. You basically, you're saying what Woody Allen said, the heart wants what it wants. Right. No matter how base it is or how profound it is.
I will not, I cannot give a full endorsement of Woody Allen, but I do agree to this quote, the heart wants what it wants. You're right, yes.
Let's kick it off a notch. How about if it turns out under the Pope, one of them is not Jewish?
Exactly. If one's not Jewish, it's no problem because the marriage is no marriage. So it doesn't matter they get married. It's not a marriage. The problem is that they're both Jewish. Yes?
Even so, you have many marriages where you have a spouse who has a particular marital condition and the other spouse is totally devoted to them. So how could you ever say you know ahead of time that somebody would have rejected it had they known?
That's an excellent question. And that's, if you turn to page, up to page 2. Page 2, so we're more or less on schedule. Page 2 points out, as a good attorney, you'll see the conflicting inferences over here. What I call on top line, the Yukim Sosrim. What happens if we can't say for sure, as you said, how do you know for sure? There's no umdana in this direction. Umdana is a word which means a near certainty. Not in this direction, and not in that direction. Because the Ran said, the Ran is a classical source, as long as it's possible that the the marriage is sweet to him and he wants to go through with it, you're not required. That's exactly what the stipler said as well. The only time you have to reveal it, if you know for a fact that he does not want this marriage no matter what, but if it's possible, then you don't have to reveal it. But the end, the stipler said, this is the third line of this page, the only time you don't have to reveal it, it's to the contrary. When it's an umdana, shalo yirtzel iskarish. That you don't want to get divorced. Implying that if it's a 50-50, then you have to reveal it. It seems to be conflicting inferences in these in-between cases. Here's my answer in paragraph 2. I can't say I'm right for sure, but that's what I think. It all depends on what the stage is. If it's possible that he will go through with it, even if he's told just before the marriage, as the Chazanish said, because he will not be able to withstand the temptation, whether it be a halachic shortcoming, whether it be a blemish shortcoming, a medical condition, or whatever, they'll tell him, right, speak now, fellow, hold your peace. Yes, this man, this woman has this medical condition. The Masada Kedushin is there, the cup is filled, right, the band is already played, and now he or she finds out there's a medical condition on the other side. That's a question. Maybe he won't want to cancel it. Oh. However, when it comes to a situation which will be revealed after they're married, that's a whole different story. After they're married, then we say that we require an umdana that they will not want to get divorced after the marriage. Because after the marriage, you know, that's a whole different story. So it's a little bit different. I think if most people won't want to get divorced, that is sufficient to keep your mouth closed. Keep your mouth closed. And again, there may be differences. Whenever we speak about majorities and minorities in halacha, there are two different kinds of minorities. What's called the miyat hamatzui and the miyat she'ena matzui, which is we usually say 10%. Life is a matter of statistics, as you all know in your various fields. So it could be that it depends on what percentage of people would want to back out before, or not. The bottom line of this whole thing is, you have to reveal a blemish, which is so great, that the minority that would be willing to go through with it before the marriage is very small. Is Mary's fault. And I think such a serious blemish, most people would even want to get divorced afterwards. That's my way of putting things on that kind of a scale. Now, it's very difficult. Let's discuss the following case. Everything we said until now is where one party, in effect, duped the other. What if neither party knew? It's happened all the time. A couple gets married, and right after, there's a diagnosis. Like I said before, MS is diagnosed during the Sheva Brachos. He or she doesn't feel well, they go to the doctor, oh, MS. When was it there? Oh, was it there a week ago? Oh, for sure it was there a week ago. So they got married, and they didn't reveal it. They didn't know about it. Would anybody want to get divorced in that kind of a case? The same case in Flatbush, the so-called case. But I'm stiff in the story, the lady is furious because the man withheld it. He withheld information. What happens if he wasn't privy to that information at the time? Didn't know. It changes the calculus. I'll give you another example. And this can happen more and more as time goes on. We talk about someone whose father is not Jewish and his mother is Jewish. And, you know, should he had revealed, he ran away. There are people walking around today, I kid you not, whose father is not Jewish and his mother is Jewish and they have no clue. Without any violations being taken place. Artificial insemination. Not everyone who's coming from artificial insemination knows that fact. That's a reality. So his father technically is not Jewish. Mother is Jewish. He doesn't know it. Just imagine the following case, that they get married, and then after the marriage, turns out this fact. So she compensated. What? News to me. I didn't know. One ever told me. It's a different attitude that she's going to have if he kept it from her. He didn't know either. So that's where this comes very tricky. Very, very tricky. It seems to me, in such a case, can we undo a marriage in such a situation? She herself didn't know. She had a certain internal disease, genetic disease. She didn't know about it. Seems to me that most people, in most cases, would not want to get divorced in that circumstance. And that's I think the majority has to be determinant. The majority can't discuss whether you've known. No one knew about it before the marriage. That's what I think. I'm giving my opinion. I can't say for sure that I'm right. Yes, Eddie.
When we were talking about before the marriage, whether to disclose, you kept talking about what's going on in his head or her head, but there's a third party. There's the Masada Kedushin. Now, if you're standing on the Makoko with this couple, and somebody says, wait, he's a Kohen, and she's a divorced
I woman, won't do the wedding.
You won't do the wedding.
I won't.
And neither will most other Orthodox.
Okay.
So now he's stuck.
He's not stuck. If he's a smart boy, he can give her a ring, say Harayat, and they're married. Who needs a rabbi? We all know that. Oh, keep it a secret between us. Okay, so now we're two-thirds through. Let's discuss the last piece, which is quoted from the Sefer Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim says, until now we've been discussing what and when, primarily the Chasam Kal themselves, the boy and the girl themselves. What about others? Is there a disclosure obligation for others? So he says, if the chassan has what he called... Yeah.
I'd like to back at this off. There's a profound difference between what nobody knows beforehand and what somebody does know beforehand. We get married, we hope, for the rest of our lives. We also hope that our spouses will be our best friend and will hold our back.
Right.
That has already been undercut by... This is fraud. This is fraud if you have a condition that you have. The only reason you're not revealing it is because you have a pretty fair idea that the other party is not going to be happy about hearing about this.
Mm-hmm.
So this is fraud for the beginning. And that's an entirely different scenario.
I'm agreeing with you. I'm agreeing with you. But nonetheless, one has to take that with a grain of salt. The Chazon Ish is exactly like you. You have to reveal it. It's not seichel not to reveal it. Nonetheless, we read in the Stipler, who's a very well-known authority, who says that your disclosure obligation with respect to Shidduch was not the same as with respect to a car or a house. And therefore, you'll say, play out the following scene. Play out the following scene. It's a fraud. You perpetrated a fraud upon me. Okay, I feel very bad you're saying that. But you know, I follow rabbinical sanction. We'll take the young man or lady, the case may be, go to Bnei Brak, and bring Rogo into Rav Kanyevsky, the stipler, and say, was this a fraud? Well, didn't you write in your book that I don't have to say this? I said, yeah, that's what I wrote in my book. So then she'll say, or he'll say, as the case may be, I follow the rules. You have a different, I sympathize with your position, but there's a rabbi out there who's bigger than all of us together, and he said, given the reality, you know, let me jump. Can I jump one step? Because let's talk about a rabbi that we all knew, those of us, Rav Moshe Feinstein. Let's jump to him. I'm going to skip a little bit to jump to him. Watch this now. I'll tell you a story. Someone mentioned it, Charles Schultz, I believe. Igris Moshe, a well-known sefer. Listen to this. Listen. It's in Chelek Gimel of Eben Ezer, Simen Chav Zayin, a 20-year-old woman, had never had a period. Never had a period, age 20. I'm not an MD, but that does not portend that well. So Rav Moshe writes based on Gemara's, well, maybe it's going to change, she'll be able to have children, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Therefore, what's the bottom line? Maybe when she'll get married, I'll start her period. Any medical truth to that? I don't think so either. Therefore, he says as follows. Eini roe sheyeh chiyuv legalo zeh. No need to reveal it. What's going on? I'm reading it to you. I'm reading it. Oh, but they'll come and say, it's crazy. So she'll have no period, so she'll have no kids, and then that's ridiculous. He would never want that. Look what Moshe suggests. You know what? They'll make a decision. This is what he calls the Rafcha de Milsa. This is to be good, to be nice. The 4 years will pass. and she won't become pregnant, and she won't have a period, and the doctors can't help her, she'll agree to accept the get without any problems whatsoever. Then, I quote Ramash, these are his words, once that happens, shuv lo yeh lahanos ah, the person who marries it won't have any kimat shum hefsed. He will lose almost nothing. Therefore, there's no need to reveal it, not even mimidas chasidus. May Hashem send her a refuah shalema with a zivug, and she'd have many children. Ad kan. How can it be? I would never pass on this way. What animated Rav Moshe? What animated Rav Moshe was Avos Yisroel? What's this poor girl going to do? My response is, you can't be a tzaddik in this case and not reveal it. Let me tell you a story. We have one of my psychiatrists here, I've consulted on more than one occasion, about some young ladies in the community who were taking some, I don't know how to say it the best way, minimalist psychiatric medications, just to calm them down a little bit. They were a little bit anxious, not anxiety. We'll say it that way. I forgot the names of those various medicines. So the doctor told me, listen, there are people who walk around this all the time. I don't think it's an obligation to reveal this going up front. Fine. So I told the young lady, my radioactive rule, halfway through, you have to reveal it. That's what I say in all these kinds of situations. Good. The boy goes out with the girl. After a month or so, and there was that kind of society, after a month, she tells the boy tells his parents, the parents break it up. Fine, that's their right. But I get a what for? Because the parents know me, and why don't you tell me right away? Rabbi Willig said, don't say right away. So I get a call from this individual who I know and I respect greatly. What'd you do? My son wasted a month of his life. And he could have gone out with another girl, da 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 da. I was going to say it like this. You're coming after me? What did Rav Moshe say? Rav Moshe said, no period, don't reveal it. After 4 years of marriage, what did he lose? What does that mean? Let's just imagine it. He was the best boy in the yeshiva at age 22. Now he's 27 and divorced. What did he lose? What he lost is staggering. And you're complaining about that your son lost 1 month of his life? You have to have a balance. You have to have a balance over here. But of course I said, in a much smaller shortcoming, if you ask me, to reveal it after a month. Rav Moshe said in a much bigger shortcoming, not to reveal it at all. So I'm just giving an example. I know where you're coming from, and I tend to agree with you, but I'm just showing you what some of the greatest rabbis have written.
Why didn't you advise the parents to not break it up? I mean, what right do they have to break up? Because of a pill?
They have every right to break it up. I can't take away that right. They have a right to yell at me too. Everyone has a right to yell at the rabbi. That's not just no problem.
I think I recall asking you, you know, like at a certain point, whatever.
Yeah.
I asked you the question: can I tell my son not to go out with a certain girl?
Yeah.
And you said no. I have no right to say that.
We'll talk about that afterwards. I don't remember. Forgive me. Okay, let's go on. So back to our text over here. So the Chofetz Chaim says, if the chosn has what he calls, in his words, a chisaron atzum. Who wants to translate the word atzum?
Great.
Atzum. Chisaron atzum. Huge. Humongous. Humongous, okay. A humongous shortcoming. Not only should the chosn reveal it, but even somebody else who knows about it should reveal it. It's the holy Chofetz Chaim, who's the biggest opponent of Lashon Hara. He says, no, you have to tell the Kala. The question is, what is the Chisar and Atzum? What's a humongous shortcoming?
I think
we have to discuss. Now, let's discuss. What's a humongous shortcoming? Comes Rav Zilberstein, Rav Yashav's son-in-law, and says, he thinks a humongous shortcoming is a shortcoming which is even b'di'evit. If you find out later on, you don't want to get divorced. That's how humongous the shortcoming has to be if someone is going to have to reveal it. That's what he suggests. Yes?
See, my question is, you say even the third person has to reveal it. I'm suggesting maybe more so, because if I go to a shotgun, so the shotgun Mishkanchen knows what I'm looking for in the Shidduch. So my due diligence, in a sense, is entrusted to the Shadchan. So for the Shadchan to present...
I wasn't discussing a Shadchan. I was discussing a third party who's not a Shadchan. No, I'm not the Shadchanim yet. Third party knows about it. Right. Don't do with a Shadchan.
In this case, are you saying that if someone inquires, you
speak? No one inquired. I have to go proactively and tell the Kalev. Do you know about this guy?
How come if it's so big, you know, no, it's not obvious then?
The $64,000 question. If it's so big, why is it not so obvious? We live in a world, even in today's world, people hide things very successfully. We have, all of us have experience very successfully. Hold on, watch this now. Listen carefully. I quote from Zilberstein, in Hebrew. You'll have to give me some good translations. End of the first paragraph of what's called Vav. Ulifizei yitachen shenargan umekanter harayhu bebchinat chisaron atzum umutar lesaper alav lashon hara. What is a nargan umekanter? What?
Nirgan,
slicha. What's a nirgan umekanter? Okay, hothead, whatever it may be. Wait a minute. Let's go slow. Slow. You get an impression that since he's coming from the stipler is referring to the chosin himself. Rabbi Zilberstein is referring to a third party. He's deriving a third party from the chosin himself. I'm not saying it's more serious or less serious as a disclosure obligation. He's saying it's the same thing. Question. Do I have to tell the girl on a date, I am a nirganu mekanter, I'm a hothead, I get angry easily. I never heard anyone to reveal that on a date. Slowly. Very good. I think, as we said before, if I fool the other party, then that's the worst thing. I fool the other party. Over here, it seems to me, I think that Dr. Mann is correct, a person who is a hothead doesn't realize there's anything wrong with him. He doesn't see it. If the doctor told him he has MS, he understands that. He's a Kayan, he understands that. But he's a hothead? No. I'm calm as a cuke. I get angry, of course. Hashem said I should get angry. I always blame God, you know, the guy's the religion, whatever else you blame it on. I'm not that kind of a guy. Now, hold on a second. The truth to be told, as I explained in this paragraph, a person on date is on his best behavior. I have a shayla. Halacha l'maaseh shayla. A guy knows he's an excitable fellow. Is he required to demonstrate his temper on a date? Is he required, you know, to get angry at the waiter who comes in and just scream it and throw the glass down? Is he required to show his temper? What? I'm asking you, what do you think, yes or no?
No.
Why not? They have to show what he's a temper. The answer is that every boy and girl knows the guy or the girl's on his best behavior on a date. Get it discounted a little bit, you know? Now hold on a second. Slowly. It's also possible, and it goes back to what we said before, if the other party has the ability to discover on their own, I'm not required to reveal it. It's not a secret. If I have some deep, dark secret that nobody can know but me, nobody knows but me, I'm the only one in the world who knows it, that's one thing. They could have found out themselves. There's an example over here. The Chofetz Chaim is talking about somebody who the chosin is not a Torah scholar. Must I tell the shver that this boy is not a Torah scholar? No! If he wanted to make sure the Torah scholar, he should have taken him to a Talmud Chacham to give him a Faher, give him a Bechina. He didn't take him. I'm not required to tell him. I'm not required. As opposed to something that, you know, the individual has some kind of shortcoming no one knows about, there's no way he could have found it out. Oh. And now we come to the following. I is the Chosin of the Kala. Now, I have to tell you two things. One is that Rav Zilberstein paskins the way I thought. A woman who has no period is required to tell the chosin in advance. Unless there is a, you know, this is how the doctors know. there's such a good chance that she's able to have pills to make her have children, that the chance of failure is what's called less than 10%. I don't think that's true if someone has no period. So he says you're required to reveal it against Rav Moshe. And now we come to our last topic before I open the floor for questions. Yes, I'll take your question now. Bipolar, it's a psychiatric case. Now, I'm not a psychiatrist here. There are at least two experts in the field sitting in the audience. Bipolar, there is some medicine, which works to some extent. It seems to me that the proper thing in such a situation is to reveal it at that halfway point. That's my psak in this kind of situation. I'm sure others will have different psak on both sides. Some of them have to reveal it up front. And someone say, I don't have to reveal it all. I'm giving you my interpretation.
Yeah, but even if I wasn't asked, like, she didn't ask me. It's obviously that I know she's doing
that. That's a good question. I have to say that according to the of Zilberstein, you might not be obliged to reveal it because is it a humongous chesaron? It depends on the case.
Yes.
Humongous is defined, we said before, the person who want to get divorced afterwards. Okay, they get married. And then the Shevet Baruch says, by the way, I have bipolar. She wants to get right away. Who thinks, who thinks, I'm going to take our first poll of the evening, who thinks that the majority of individuals, when told that either the Chosn or Kal is bipolar, the week of Shevet Baruch will want to get right away? You're a minority, I'm sorry to say it. Yeah, so I don't know, but it's just a small sample. It's tricky. I would say I have to disclose it anyway.
If she knows her friend, she would know if her friend is.
That's correct. Your friend may not be part of the general population pool. How old is your friend? Is she 21 or 31? You know, these things can have an impact on these kinds of decisions. And let's be honest, you know, yeah, that's a reality. I can't give a psak. I would say the chosn should reveal it, the kallah should reveal it, they shouldn't have the third party reveal it. You can threaten them. You better reveal it or else I'm going to reveal it. I've done that already. You better reveal it or else I'm going to do it. We've had cases of people in our shul who had diabetes. Diabetes? I told them you should reveal it. They have at the midway point. They did, Baruch Hashem, they're married, they have children, marrying of children, because they listened to what I told them. Had they said before the first day, diabetes? Probably the girl would have said, no, what do I need it for? Huh? What do you say? Yeah, exactly. But after they have some kind of an emotional connection. So, yes.
We're putting then the burden on the person, the two people who are going out.
That's my personal view. If you're old enough to get married, you always have a burden. In my opinion, you have to reveal all of these things.
But who
said the Shevcha knows who the Rosh Hashiva knows? But the boy or the girl knows.
Right, so then the boy or the girl, let's take it to an 18, 19, 20 year old.
I repeat, if you're old enough to get married, you're old enough to bear the burden.
So they bear the burden of asking, inquiring, or telling, or both.
As the case may be.
I'm a gambler.
Here's the story. Oh, outrageous. The mother used a plastic table, and that's enough to destroy any shitter. Oh. And if she wears sneakers? Oh, forget it. And if she drives? Forget it. Anyway, every society is different, and I'm not going to give any hard and fast rules over here. But I'm saying something very, this is very serious. There's lives are at stake over here. I believe if you're old enough to get married, you're old enough to take your own destiny in your hands. The reality, as Margie is saying, is that very often parents, especially with younger children, they are in charge. The children aren't even in charge. The children aren't even told certain situations. Let me go to one more example, then I'll answer all your questions. Next, the last two paragraphs have big English letters, which everyone recognizes. Everyone recognizes it. Okay? That's how it's called even in the Hebrew book, that's how it's called. BRCA. Everyone knows what that means. Rav Zilberstein Paskins. If a woman has this gene, she is required to tell a fiancé or a potential chassan that she has it. Okay, I think that's completely correct. I think it's completely correct. Midway, not the first one. Midway.
That means everybody has to be tested.
I didn't say that. That's the next step. Well, I didn't say that at all. I believe everyone should not be tested. What happens, though, in the in-between case? She's not any woman. There's a first-degree relative who's involved with this. Let's read it. The last two paragraphs. If a mother has it, says Rav Zilberstein, the girl is required to check to see if she has the gene. Because if she doesn't check, she is in violation of what he calls Iser Hanah. She may be fooling the man. My geneticists tell me, if the mother has it, it's 50-50 the girl's going to have it. Is that a fact or not? Genetics. Not true? No one knows? All the doctors said? I thought it was 50-50. That's what I thought. So that's what geneticists told me. One second. Now, hold on a second. So Rav Zilberstein is saying it's prohibited for her to remain in a state of ignorance, so she won't have to tell him. Why? Because it's 50-50. But what will happen if right now in the general pool there's less than a 10% chance that I have something or other, whatever it may happen to be. There's no requirement for me to test. The same way they don't have to check for the animal to have a hole in its stomach or a hole in its this, because less than 10%, you're not required to check for some blemish, medical or otherwise you may have. It's less than 10%. However, with all respect to Rav Zilberstein, and I think he's a tremendous Talmud Chacham, life experience teaches me a little bit differently. That's my last paragraph here. If the stipler is right, go back to where we started. First we said it was a stipler, an hour ago, a stipler. It's a shortcoming, but if someone found out afterwards, they wouldn't want to have a divorce. So there's no disclosure obligation in the first place. Let's talk about BRCA, BRCA. Person finds out afterwards, people don't ask for divorce. There are cases I know where there could be a first degree relative who has it, and the girl is 20, 21, doesn't even know about it. Doesn't even know about it. We want from the poor girl. She doesn't know. So she gets married, okay? And after she gets married, it turns out that she gets tested and she has it. The guy will say, why didn't you tell me? I didn't know. So a person may say, why should I, get back to the word burden before, why should I burden the 20-year-old with genetic information, which once the girl knows about it, she feels she's going to have to reveal it, say nothing, and leave it at that. Of course, the question would be, you're keeping a deep, dark secret. Here's my punchline. If, in fact, it's a deep, dark secret, I believe it's a disclosure obligation. As the Chazon Ish said so. What are you keeping secrets for? What if it's not a deep, dark secret that the close relative of this particular individual had this particular illness? Not a secret at all. So now the question is, well, what's the attitude of the other side? So I know from personal experience that the attitudes can be as divergent as you can possibly imagine. In some people, a medical problem, I'm running away as fast as I can. And others, what me worry? They don't even inquire. So why should a young lady have to first find out what if she has it and then reveal it? Remember, once you reveal it to one person and it breaks up, can you be guaranteed that the one person is not going to yenta to the whole world about what you have? Which they shouldn't. They shouldn't say a word to anybody else. Because after all, if nothing is told to anybody else, she can still go through the one-month process and then tell the guy. If someone's yentering around, so if it's not a secret, if it's known in the community, I get these calls on a regular basis. So if the call comes in, the person is concerned. They have the right to be concerned. You have a right to break up a shidduch for whatever reason you want. They're not obligated to go through. But if the person doesn't inquire, notwithstanding the fact that it's a pretty well-known fact, maybe the person doesn't care. So that's why you have to be thinking very carefully before burdening a 20-year-old. There are people out there who they don't care about it. So now there's treatments. There's this. So I'm going through the treatments right now. What could be done preventively, etc., etc.
Future generations.
So if somebody's carrying around BRCA1 and has passed that along, believe me, a 20-year-old wants to know that. Just and for her sake, she should know it.
I happen to be a fan of full information, and but not everyone agrees with me.
No, but my point here is that sometimes the information may be relevant then to a shidduch, but it's done primarily not so that you should be upfront, so to speak, on all shidduch possibilities, but for your own self.
I agree with you, so, but not everyone agrees with us. We agree on something. Not everyone, we can't control the whole world. We can't. The people have different attitudes on these things. Okay, let's just summarize. We've spoken about many difficult circumstances, and believe me, we've left out much more than we've spoken about, because the number of permutations and cases, whether it be family issues, genetic issues, you know, the uncle has this, and then it's limitless how many problems it could be. And they say there's a skeleton in every closet, and you know, this one's not telling this one, it's not telling this one. Oh, perfect shidduch, you know. So, but I gave you some of the guidelines as I wrote about and as I'm explaining to you to the best of my ability. I think if a person has a particular question, they should ask a shayla, and rabbanim have to be somewhat qualified to try to answer these questions. They're all difficult. They're not easy. But I believe that this is certainly a part of our series, because there could be cases which are so serious that if something is kept from the chos no kala, it can lead to an annulment of the marriage. I absolutely believe so. But it has to rise to a very high standard. That we said before, that if the person would find out about it, they would want to get divorced. Not just you would, but most people would. It's not a simple standard to reach. So the case of MS, especially after what you told me today, it seems to me there's no way we can annul that marriage in Flatbush. So whatever money's going to cost them to get, I feel bad for the situation. But we have to be very careful in terms of our approaching these very thorny issues, because you're dealing with lives. Not a matter of, you know, a couple of dollars here and there. Their lives are at stake. Marriages that could happen and marriages could break up. Remember Rabbi Dr. A.J. Tversky wrote years ago about keeping psychiatric problems, you know, a secret. It's the worst advice. It's going to come out. It's going to be problems. And whatever happens at the end, it's no good. Should try to be upfront. That's my bias. Be upfront. I don't think I have to reveal everything right away. But I call the halfway point. I think that's the more or less according to as the Chaznish was quoted. And that's what I tell to people in most of these circumstances. If you have any questions, I'm happy to talk about it privately. I'd like to wish everyone a Shavua Tov. I'd also like to make a brief announcement afterwards. The announcement is, last week I was in...